Welcome today to our interview series with Outstanding Professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Kathy Shaughnessy. Kathy is an internationally renowned speaker, award-winning corporate executive coach, best-selling author, and partner with Shaughnessy Howell Incorporated. Kathy, thank you for coming in today to share your insights with the audience.
Well, Stephen, thank you for having me. I'm absolutely delighted to be here.
Kathy, how's the weather there?
Well, I would have to tell you that for an Ontario day, it's fabulous, normal. It is filled with tons of snowbanks as I look out my window and a sheet of ice. So fortunately, I can do this interview remotely because I wouldn't want to be out in the roads today.
Kathy, can we share or can you talk about some of your long history of successes? You know, you've done a lot. You've won many awards and things like that. And can you profile how you got to your present position and what your current role entails?
Well, that's a great question, Stephen, and thanks. One of the things, looking back over the 25 years that I've been in the training and development industry and the 19 years that we've been operating Shaughnessy Howell, myself and my business partner, Marion Thompson Howell, one of the responses I would have to that question is I got here accidentally on purpose. And really, we have had a great, great opportunity to grow with the training and development industry. When I started 25 years ago, the concept of sharing learning was really very new. And so we've been able to grow and change and adjust with the industry. And the industry has really very much changed, so much so that when we started, I was doing training sessions for an organization by the name of Career Track. They were a seminar company based in Boulder, Colorado. And they specialized at the time in large venue sessions, leadership skills for women, managing stress, those kinds of sessions. And there would be 750, 850 people in a room, in a ballroom, and I would travel across the country, across Canada and the United States, delivering the same session, 9 to 4 every day. And at that time, that was the state of the art, and CareerTrack was the Cadillac in the industry for that kind of session. What we have experienced going forward is that organizations are more likely to want their learning to take a bit of a different shape and be very specific to what's happening in their industries. So where we are today is that Shaughnessy Howell specializes in really matching people skills to corporate strategy. So whenever an organization articulates where they want to go as an organization, they invite us in to help give people the tools and the skills that they need to be able to take that organization where it needs to go relative to its strategy. So it's been a wild ride, an exciting ride, and certainly one that has caused us to consistently evaluate what we're doing as a business and where we fit in the marketplace.
You know, that's really interesting. I know that you've won some awards. I think 3 now is the last count. And can you share your experiences about this with the audience?
Well, actually, my projects that I've been leading, I've won 3 awards, but Shaughnessy Howell has won 6 awards from the Canadian Society for Training and Development. And that is our main industry association. And each year they select programs that stand out as leading in the field for a whole variety of reasons. There's quite a rigorous process that one goes to be able to compete. And we are the only winners of 6 gold awards, which is we're absolutely thrilled and delighted. One of the things that that's helped us to do, and working with CSTD has helped us to do, is to continuously ask the question, are we coming forward in excellence with our learning? You can't stay still where learning is concerned, and one of the things that becomes challenging is to consistently look at your work and ask, are we bringing the best material to the table? And if I circle that back to, you know, overall our job or the place that we have in the industry is to be talking about helping people have the skills that they need to move their organizations forward, we have to make sure that we're doing that in a way that is leading edge. So it's helped to keep us honest, and it's helped to keep us competitive.
Well, that's interesting you bring these kind of aspects up, because I know that I was very fortunate to attend 2 of your workshops, and that's what led to this interview. I was just so impressed, and I know all the attendees were very impressed with what you did, because you really tailored to our needs, and you have some really key messages in terms of enabling success and things like that. So I can see why the awards came about. And, you know, obviously there's excellence there, and you're really sort of targeting in it, and it makes a real difference. So I thank you for that, for all of that kind of value that you bring to audiences.
Thank you so much.
So sort of drilling deeper then, what important career insights and lessons can you share from your considerable experiences as a internationally renowned speaker, and then, as I mentioned, an award-winning corporate and career coach?
Well, there's a couple of things, and if I were to focus really clearly on, you know, sort of the individual and then the organization, they kind of go in two different directions. I would say, first of all, in terms of insights, gone are the days when an individual can take a job and assume that once they get to a particular skill level, they can stop growing. And one of the important recognitions that I have had and that I really try to encourage people to focus on is learning is, in fact, lifelong. And we need to keep growing. We need to keep asking ourselves, what am I bringing to the table? How is the industry changing? How is my job changing? How can I add value? Because if we're not doing that, we're standing still, and our organizations really can't stand still anymore. On the flip side of that is what's happening in our organization. And most businesses and industries, public and private sector alike, are coming to the conclusion rapidly that they need to be able to provide environments that are allowing others to grow and allowing their people to grow, because people stay where they can grow. So, again, organizations need to be thinking about how are we providing an environment that is rich enough with opportunity to keep people growing on their jobs and to keep that knowledge in-house. Those are the two things. Learn yourself, and if you're somewhere in an organization where you have leadership potential or capacity, or you're responsible for the environment that you provide for people, make sure you're providing a learning environment.
You know, I caught one of your workshops, as I was indicating earlier, and I thought it was really quite interesting. It was about sort of insights you can gain about people based on the shapes they choose. Can you elaborate on this one and provide some guidance on how to best maximize interaction and communication with others?
Oh, sure. That is a fun, fun session. And to give you some background on that, Stephen, it is based on some work that is done by Dr. Susan Dellinger. And Dr. Dellinger coined the phrase psychogeometrics. And probably two decades ago, she began to do work in the area of communication styles and what gets organizations and teams and individuals stuck in their interpersonal relationships. And she took really the basis of theories of psychology and theories of management development that have been coined over a number of years, and she attached geometric shapes to personality styles and to principles that had been developed industry-wide, principles that have been developed across various industries. And what has been really cool about this process is that she has, with the shapes, given us a very easy way to identify the personality styles rather than being complex. It's very connected with Myers-Briggs type indicators and any of the personality typing theories that you would see out there today. But she's taken these geometric shapes and caused it to be easy for us to remember and interesting for us to remember to identify what people we're working with and to recognize that not everyone is exactly the same. She's also recognized that not only do we have a shape ourselves, but we need to be flexing our shapes based on the people who are on our team. So to give you some quick examples, she's identified one particular shape as a circle. And so the circles among us are those people who are always friendly, open, positive, no matter what you ask them to do, enough is never enough. They will bend over backward. They're the people who will go to the meeting and bake five kinds of muffins and make sure that they're taking notes and make sure that everyone's okay. The circles are the people who you would want to call at 3 o'clock in the morning when you can't call anybody else, and they'll drop what they're doing and drive wherever you need to go and pick you up. The squiggles are another shape, and in contrast to the circles, these folks are all over the map, lively and exciting and interesting, and they are idea people, love ideas. Not so good on the follow-through, but they're the people that are the life of the party, the ones who are dancing around with the lampshades on their heads, and the people who are coming up with the great concepts. Compare those to the square boxes, and the square box personality style is the individual who has a real affinity for details. Their highlighters in their desk drawer are always in the exact order that they were in the night before. If you were to sneak into the square box's kitchen in the middle of the night, you would find that in the vegetable drawer would be contained only vegetables. And eggs are in the egg carton, and everything is just so. And so they're the people that you want to have around to execute on details, because they're the executors. They're the people who will dot the I's and cross the T's. So those are three of the five, and you can see that they are very different, but easy to remember. If you have a colleague who's a squiggle, it easily brings the template to mind.
You know, really, something that I found particularly interesting in a workshop that I attended with you, and you actually got us to sort of choose a shape that we felt most comfortable with, and then you sort of identified the attributes associated with that shape, and pretty much everybody there,
yeah,
it fit.
Yeah.
You know, whether with they were a squiggle, or whether they chose a circle or a square or rectangle or whatever, it was almost like uniformly, very high percentage match. And you could see how there could be disconnects between different groups. You know, if I'm a square and I'm talking to a squiggle, and we just don't seem to connect. And it's because our language and our sort of manners are so different, and you sort of have to align to the person you're talking to. So, and you went through that in the workshop, and I thought it was great,
Well, and Susan does talk about the whole idea of flexing, and it's really based on the realization that across all, cultures, there really are specific styles, and that in any group, people will fall into buckets. It's not intended by any stretch to pigeonhole people, but rather to give you more insights into how to work with them more effectively. It's a great program, and it's lots of fun.
Yeah, I would recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. Something else that I attended was that you did another presentation, but I want to sort of set a context to this. I recently interviewed Hall of Famer from Silicon Valley, and he started a myriad of companies, and he talked about a board meeting he just recently attended, and he said that the chairs of some, like, the six largest companies were there. And so it's just this great career, and I asked him, is there one piece of advice that you can pass on? And he says, I can talk about business skills and all of this, but he said, really, it probably comes down to one thing: can you make great presentations?
Mm.
And so this goes back to this sort of idea of how to make a great presentation, and you're a recognized authority on this, so can you provide your top tips on making presentations?
Oh, absolutely. And I would like to tell you that there are really two things that I would focus on. And one of the challenges in being a person who delivers presentations a lot and is described as an authority is that the microscope is really on you in terms of always, being right on and doing exactly the right thing. And so I would say the first thing is, recognize that it's not about perfection. And it's not about, never messing up your words, or never saying an or never missing your, place or forgetting where you're going. That's not it at all. What people are looking for in presentations is, are you authentic? Do you bring to the table a skill set in a way that is interesting to listen to, that is engaging to listen to, and that really makes people want to, sit up and pay attention to what you're saying? So, it's the authenticity that's important. The second piece that I would add to that is something that you will recognize from the 5-star presentations program that you attended, which was, I always tell people the most critical thing that they're taking away are three letters. And those three letters are you, be, you. And what that really means to me is, anytime you make a presentation, you should be you. Because we are the best people, we're the most authentic when we are ourselves. Too many people try to deliver a presentation thinking that they need to be like someone else. They need to deliver like a particular individual. They have a picture in mind. And instead, what they need to be doing is sanding off the rough edges of their own presentation style. Not everyone is a stand-up comic, nor should everyone try to be. Not everyone is an academic delivery style, nor should everyone try to be. So figure out what is your, winning strategy, if I were to use something that comes from the field of coaching. Figure out what you do best, and then polish it up so that it absolutely shines, and you'll have lots of people sitting up and taking notice of your presentation.
So, you do a lot of work, and you're reading and sort of doing a lot of outreach into the marketplace and so forth, and you have these ideas about cultivating initiative and staff. Can you share those ideas?
Well, this was actually a program that was developed quite a number of years ago when I was working with CareerTrack. And the concept at the time was that if we could teach people to meet their goals at the same time as meeting the goals of the organization, to do what needed to be done without necessarily having to be asked, we could lighten the load of managers, and we could make our organizations have more traction moving forward because people would not have to be, you know, supervised so closely. One of the things we found when we were doing the research for this program was that there are essentially three reasons why people don't see what needs to be done and do it without being asked, which is really initiative in a nutshell. The first reason is they don't know how. They clearly do not know how to do the job or how to take initiative. Second is they don't really want to. They know how, but for whatever reason, they've become complacent or they feel somehow prevented from doing the job and they don't know how to. And third is that they don't think it's important. And so if you look at those three reasons, you would recognize that there are some really key strategies that an organization or even an individual manager can take if what they want to do is cultivate initiative in their staff. First, in terms of don't know how, are we training people effectively? Are we really giving them the time and the space to learn the specific tools that they need to do the job effectively? Because at the basis of all of us, we all want to do a good job, regardless of how, you know, we might think some people on our teams feel about that, but we want to succeed. So are we giving people the tools, the time, and the time to develop those tools? Second, if people don't want to, this really comes back to the right people in the right jobs. And what we come up against time and time again as an organization is individuals or managers or training and development organizations coming to us and saying, how do we get this person to do the right thing? And the first question we have to ask is this the right person in the job in the first place? Some people are in the wrong job, and so they've clearly not got the skills that they need, and they don't really want to do the job appropriately. Third thing is they don't think it's important. And we are in, you know, such a rapid change time today in our organization. And we forget to stop and really let people focus and get us all in the right direction. We don't have people singing from the same song sheet anymore. We're just doing so quickly. We don't stop and ask, are we going in the right direction and does everybody know where we're going? So we firmly believe that direction setting is so critical to helping people get on the same page and do what they need to do and take initiative in doing it.
You also give a lot of keynotes, and there's, you know, many lessons within those keynotes. So can you share effective tips from your keynotes, such as keeping your head without losing your mind and think fast and say it right?
Yeah, I love doing keynotes. I find that keynote presentations for me are a huge kick, usually because there's a tremendous amount of energy in the room, large group of people. So it is an opportunity to energize people, to energize myself. It really is an opportunity to be able to set things off on the right foot for a conference. So sometimes I'm opening a conference, sometimes I'm closing, but I can pull and weave a theme together. Two of the pieces that have been very popular for me over the last while, two of the themes, have been one session called Keeping Your Head Without Losing Your Mind. And the basis of this program is recognizing that all of us are operating in a crazy, wacky world of work that is moving so quickly today. We're all doing what we need to do in the workplace, but we're losing our minds in the balance. So we may be standing in the boardroom delivering a presentation beautifully, handling a customer call or dealing with someone who is irate very simply and masterfully. And when we jump in the car to drive home, we are honking the horn at the person who takes 2 seconds too long to turn left. We're screaming in Starbucks. We're really finding that it's hard to stay in control in the times when we identify that it doesn't matter. When it matters, we're in control. And on the flip side, when we're out in the world, we're losing our minds all over the place. So I make a number of recommendations to people, one of which is pay attention to what you're doing and ask yourself, is it actually working? So many people are applying strategies to deal with rapid change in their organizations, and it's not working because they're feeling crazy. And we talk about, you know, three specific strategies in that program that sound very simple on the surface. They are focus, prioritize, and regroup. And although it would take me much more time to get into the details of them, but although they seem very simple, they're not common practice. And we need to stop and do one thing at a time and focus more specifically on exactly what we want at the end of the day. And if you're, you know, screaming in your car on your commute home, something's wrong. You may be keeping your head, but you're losing your mind in the process. The other program that I deliver as in a keynote style is a program called Think Fast and Say It Right, and it's really based on the concept, again, that it's closely tied to presentation skills, that when people ask us a question, we've got about 30 seconds to make sense or look like we have no idea what we're talking about. And so many of us have, you know, followed up conversations that we've had thinking to ourselves, you know what I think should have said, you know what I would have said, you know what would have been great. And we've wasted that first 30 seconds. So that program teaches us how to grab hold of that 30 seconds and by use of several models that I use, how to start the conversation, how to keep the conversation going so that you're not wasting your time delivering your message. Both very fun programs.
You alluded to this earlier in our discussion in one of your responses about sort of change within an organization. So what are your lessons, and based on your experiences and all the research you've done in terms of managing change within an organization?
Well, this comes back to an exercise that I did within a change management program probably 15 years ago. And it began with an opportunity to have people work in groups and answer the question, change is. And so in their groups, they had flip charts and markers, and their assignment was to, with as many words as they could come up with, finish the statement, change is. And so people usually said, you know, change is awful, change is upheaval, change is nasty. Every once in a while you'd have people say, you know, change is great, but that wasn't very common. And through that process, people would come up with their words, and we would discuss how, you know, how appropriate it is that as we're going through change, we might assign a more negative word to it, and somebody would, you know, typically pipe up and put something more positive to it because they think they should. And what I've learned over the years is that change may be positive, and change may be hell, and change may be, you know, difficult and challenging and all of those things. But what we know today, 15 years later, is that change simply is. And what I mean by that is that change is a part of our day-to-day. And we're not going to go back to the time in most people's organizations where things stay the same for a decade. We are changing at such a rapid rate. One of the experts in the change field calls it permanent white water. And that, to me, is so critical in recognizing that our task is not to figure out how to deal with this period of change, but how to operate and stay focused at a time of permanent white water. That's what I've learned about change is.
In your various sort of interactions with organizations, you come across sort of the hierarchy or the structure within those organizations, and I'm sure you get feedback of what works and what doesn't. Many of my audience are managers, so how does one become the manager everybody or everyone wants to work for?
That's a great, first of all, laudable goal to be the manager that everyone wants to work for. The way that I would answer that is just a very fundamental and not too complicated answer. Pay attention to your own development. It is so important as a manager to recognize that becoming a manager is not a place. It's not a finish line. It is an opportunity to develop your skills, and your skills need to be focused on how best to develop skills in others. Many managers today are run off their feet. They are connected 24/7. They are trying to meet their own goals as well as help others to do what they need to do, and they're not building enough capacity in their teams. And one of the reasons they're not building capacity in their teams is because they haven't spent enough time really focused in on what are the skills that I need to develop skills in others. And so it's no more complicated than that. Pay attention to your own development. And as you are focusing on others, people will be clamoring to work with you.
It's interesting your response, or you know, it sounds like some of the sort of the principles apply to kind of raising children or interacting and mentoring others applies to the
organization. Isn't that so true? My kids are the toughest bosses I've ever worked for, toughest team I've ever managed.
You know, you have such a rich environment, and you're always engaging with others and so forth. You must have some really interesting stories that you can share.
First of all, you are absolutely right. I have had such a rich and varied career and worked with so many organizations over time that every organization presents a different set of individuals and a different set of challenges. One of the things that I've noticed, though, is that the addresses might be different and the building might be different and the people might be different, but the challenges are all fairly similar from year to year, so that things keep popping up. For example, now managing change or dealing with change is quite critical again. People are talking about it, but they haven't been talking about it for the last, 10 or 15 years. I've made a subtle shift in the kinds of projects that I'm working on now and have begun to work with people in the area of executive coaching. And I'm just about to wrap up on a certification for executive coach through Royal Roads University, which is the only university in Canada that is affiliated with the International Coach Federation. What I've been able to do there is actually work directly with executives to help them figure out how to take their development to the next level, what they're doing that isn't working, and what they need to do most effectively. And what I've been finding is that it has been such a kick to work so directly with individuals on their own development and then watch them grow. Where in a group environment, it's harder to be directly connected to results. And so with this kind of work, it's been fantastic. And so I'm sure, I'll have many stories to share in the years to come. But, no one thing that I could put my finger on.
It sounds like a series you can put on YouTube or something, a video series or a book.
That's my next. In my spare time, I've got to capture some of this stuff.
And then you're going to be on Oprah, right?
Here's hoping.
This is a question I've been asking quite a bit lately, and it's about news items that I see, and it's things like aligning IT with business needs or driving business agility, managing risk through improved governance, closing the skills gap and meeting the future skills shortage, addressing the productivity gap, improving adoption rates or integrating Gen Y and more. So it's sort of a plethora of many sort of topic areas, and I kind of see these coming up again and again. So I've been asking the people I've been interviewing, what are your views on these challenges that are facing business and industry and government and education this year and beyond? What are your views on this?
I think anyone's view is really dependent on their perspective. And so because so much of the work that I do is focused on the learning field, and again, connecting people skills to organizational strategy, the challenges that I see organizations facing are really around knowledge, and in particular around knowledge drain. There are a whole lot of individuals and experts who are writing about this right now, but what we're beginning to find is that great people are working with organizations and taking their knowledge with them when they go. And this presents a huge challenge for companies because it's hard to build capacity, and it's very difficult to build continuity within their teams and within their workplaces and divisions because the great knowledge is walking out the door. And so much of what we spend our time doing is helping organizations to build that capacity to make sure that their knowledge stays there, even if the employee leaves. And so they do this through, we work with them to do this through, developing great orientation programs, cross-training, developing strategies for cross-training staff so that there's more than one person who has the knowledge in their head. Breaking down the silos in organizations so that people feel safe sharing what they know. And that's hard to do when individuals feel as though their job is in jeopardy. They're more likely to hold that knowledge close to them and not share it with others. So it's very, very important to build a culture that empowers people, that creates some trust, that allows people to feel that they can share their knowledge with others so that when they do take other opportunities elsewhere, they're not jeopardizing their organization and leaving a mess in their wake.
Using this sort of context of the great background you have and having taken on so many different roles and with great success, do you have any additional items you want to share and sort of thoughts about the future?
Well, I guess the question that I would, that I think is the burning question out there today is, how can great people keep on learning? And this is true of us as individuals. You mentioned the idea of how true much of what I'm saying is for families. And when we think about how can great people keep on learning, the question I often ask is, how can I be a better parent? What are the challenges that are facing me today in raising children that are going to assist me in that I can learn from. So what is the opportunity in the challenge? So in my, you know, parenting right now, there's a whole lot of questions about text messaging and constantly, you know, being connected, and how does that, what does that mean when you're doing your homework? And should you be able to do your homework while you're text messaging on your telephone and you're instant messaging your friends on the computer? And so what some parents tend to do is just push that away and say, because it wasn't a part of my world, it shouldn't be a part of my kids' world. And what I believe to be true is that we need to keep learning in order to figure out how we can take the current situation and make it positive. So my question is not, how do I keep my kid from doing this, but how do I help my child to use this tool to its advantage? And what are some of the great outcomes and outgrowths of these tools so that we can use this in a positive way to interconnect our kids? Because our kids need connection. If I jump that over to how do great people keep learning in the workplace? Again, the question is, what are the challenges that we're facing as a workplace today? This concept of whitewater change. And rather than resisting it, ask, how can we learn to operate most effectively within it? And what is it telling us? And how can we take the opportunity in the lesson and learn from it? And that goes into, you know, corporate responsibility and where we are as organizations relative to what's happening in our global community. What's happening? And rather than pushing to stop it, ask, how can we learn from it, and how can we keep moving and take our learning to the next level? That's the bigger question. That's what I think we all need to be asking ourselves.
Well, Kathy, I really enjoyed this session. Great, you know, sort of responses and exchange here. So thank you for taking the time to share your, you know, wisdom and deep insights with the audience. And, you know, we'll continue to follow your innovative work with keen interest and looking to future awards that you'll be winning.
Well, here's hoping, and it was absolutely my pleasure. Thanks so much for taking the time.